is Julio Guerrero, who's a third-year doctoral student in health education at Texas A&M University, where he also is a graduate scholar for the Center for the Study of Health Disparities and a research assistant under Dr. Ranjita Misra and an instructor in the Physical Education and Activity Project. He is completing his final semester of academic work and is planning on completing his dissertation, which focuses on metabolic syndrome prevention among Mexican Americans next year. And looking forward to beginning an academic career, continuing his research in the area of metabolic syndrome prevention, acculturation and immigrant health, and Latino health disparities. And this is with his passionate interest in Mexican and other Latin American immigrants and chronic disease prevention, he's planning to become a acclaimed Latino health researcher and a leader in health promotion and public health. Today he's going to present findings from a class project entitled "Are Consumers Engaging in Protective Behaviors Against Medication Errors? An Observational Study."
Good afternoon, everyone. As Dr. Triozzi said, I'm a third-year doctoral student in health education at Texas A&M University, and I'm presenting a class project from my applied epidemiology class. You can see here there were seven of us that were involved, and also our professor, Dr. Ranjita Misra. What we did is we went around the local community, a local College Station community, and observed customers at pharmacies, and we determined or we identified three specific behaviors, which I'll present in a second. But we just wanted to know if they were engaged in any protection against medication errors, whether they were, you know, making sure information was correct, prescription was correct. So as we go through, these are just findings from our project. Is this some background information from previous studies? We see here that 80% of U.S. adults, you know, take medications, whether it's prescribed or over-the-counter, orally ingested, topical ointments, whatever. Over 200 million customers visit pharmacies each year. So with the high volume of customers at pharmacies, there's an increased possibility of human error. According to previous studies, about 22% of prescriptions are deviated from their original written orders. And that's, obviously is a high number, and that's, that's according to one study, but, when we're looking at prescriptions, there's a high amount of possible errors. According to another study, about four errors occur in pharmacies that filled about 250 prescriptions per day. So that number doesn't seem as high, but still any error could be drastic, could lead to adverse conditions. For example, 80% of drug allergies were overridden in one study, 6% of which led to an adverse event. And an additional study stated that 7,000 deaths occur in the U.S. per year attributed to prescription errors. So as a class, we decided that this was something that we wanted to look into and just to pursue a project that, you know, perhaps could lead to additional studies. We used the definition of medication error from the National Coordinating Council for Medication Error Reporting and Prevention. It's a long name. But they state that a medication error is any preventable event that may cause or lead to inappropriate medication use or patient harm while the medication is in the control of the healthcare professional or the consumers. Now, there's a step-by-step process that this occurs. You can see here there's four stages of the prescription process. I'm sorry, my laser pointer is not, you know, as dense as I would like it to be.
The mouse should work.
Okay, I'll use the mouse. Okay, so here are the four stages. And you can see here that most prescriptions come from the physician, from the prescription, the written order. We're not going to attack the physicians for lack of knowledge or intelligence or anything like that. But there's a high-paced work environment that just a slight error could occur. The transcription process, whenever the pharmacy receives a prescription to packaging the medication. And then I highlighted the last two, the dispensing and consumption, because that's whenever the consumers have most control of this entire process. So if either they receive the wrong medication, or they misuse the medication, or they abuse the medication. All right. But few studies have investigated, you know, the behaviors that the consumers can engage in against medication errors. So we decided to look at this to determine whether, you know, consumer engage in protective behaviors at pharmacies. There's three behaviors that we identified that we wanted to look in. This is the reason why this is an observational study. We had to pose as customers, so we wouldn't be able to be identified as a researcher. So we felt that these three we could easily assess in our observation. So the first, that they look at the outside of the bag. In our part of the country, I don't know where it is, you know, what it's like everywhere else, but in Texas or in College Station, Texas, pharmacies would staple the receipt and the prescription to the medication. You can see here's a picture of a paper clip. I don't know what it's like everywhere else, but here in Texas and College Station, they would staple the receipt and the prescription. So we wanted to know if they were actually looking at that information to see if the information is correct. Is the prescription, if it's even the right patient, the right customer. The second one, did they actually look inside the bag? Did they break that seal of the staple? I mean, it could serve as a barrier for not opening the bag inside the store. But did they actually look inside the bag to make sure that the medication was there and it was correct? And then finally, did they actually look at the medication label again to make sure that the information was correct? So those are three behaviors that we looked at in our observations. The study was guided by three aims. We wanted to determine the percentage of consumers who engaged in consumer protective behaviors against medication errors. We wanted to determine the consumer protective behaviors among gender, race, age, and accompanied status. Now, accompanied status we defined as if they were accompanied by anyone, whether it was their 3-year-old daughter or their 45-year-old son who was, you know, concerned for a parent's health or a caregiver. So we just defined them as anybody who was accompanying the customer. And then finally, to determine whether consumer wait time influenced protective behaviors. Now, we define wait time by either light or busy in terms of the pharmacy workload. If the consumer had to wait for even 20 seconds for one customer, we define that as busy. We were too caught up in making sure that we weren't identified as researchers, that we didn't want to say, okay, well, after this amount of time or whatever. We just said if they stood in line for any amount of time, we said that was busy. Okay, so it could have been a line of 20 customers or just one. Okay, so we went around the pharmacies in College Station, Bryan College Station, Texas, and we only observed transactions at the walk-up counters, not at the drive-thru. It would be very difficult for us to mask our identity as researchers by, you know, being outside standing by the dumpster or whatever. You know, we're sweeping the pavement, but they would get suspicious of what we were doing. So we just focused solely on the walk-up counters throughout various parts of the day throughout the fall semester of 2010. And we inputted all information into a data log that looked very similar to this. I'm not going to go into this in detail, but this is just what it looked like, just how we identified and made sure that we got the race and gender, accompanied status. They looked outside the bag, inside the bag, and looked at the label. But that's just an example of how we recorded all the information. These are the specific variables that we wanted to investigate. The gender, obviously male or female. The four different races. Accompanied status and wait time. Now, age group, it was impossible for us to accurately identify their age because we had no contact with the customers. So we just guessed and we kind of put categories, that customer looks like she's between 31 or 40 or 50, 41 and 50. So it was just a guess. So that was one of the limitations. We couldn't identify the correct age group. But it is a college town. College Station is College Town. So most of our participants were between the ages of 18 and 30. We used chi-square test to determine the significant differences in behavior among the five variables using SPSS. And here are the preliminary results. We were able to observe 617 customers. Most of the customers were female, white, between the ages of 18 and 30 were not accompanied, otherwise alone, had no wait. It was a light workload, so they didn't wait in line. They walked straight up to the counter and received service. According to our results, 29.7% looked outside the bag. And then 13% looked inside the bag, and then 10% looked at the label. So in other words, over 70% of our sample didn't engage in any protective behaviors whatsoever. We don't know why. Obviously, we had no contact with them, but I mean, we could assume that most of the customers who didn't even engage in one probably assumed that the information was correct, that there was no need to check or to detect for any errors. And like I said, this is a high college town. The population was younger, so perhaps maybe they're not aware or they don't feel the threat of adverse conditions from possible errors. Here are the results according to the variables. We'll start with gender and age group. There was really not too much of a difference between males and females, though you can see here that males engaged in protective behavior, but it wasn't a significant difference. The age group, there was a significant difference between the younger age group and the older age group. So I guess we can start to, again, we had no idea how or why the older crowd, the older participants engaged in protective behaviors. Perhaps they're more aware or they're more concerned for their health than the younger age group. According to race, our Asian subgroup was most likely to engage in protective behaviors, but one of the limitations was that we didn't have an equal sample. If I go back here to this slide, you can see here the Asian subgroup. There was only 21 participants that were Asian. Most of our participants were white, over almost 70% of our participants. So we don't know how accurate race serves as a predictor for consumer protective behaviors. Accompanied status: those who were accompanied were more likely to engage in behavior, and we think the reason why is because most of the people who were accompanied had a caregiver or somebody who was concerned about the customer's health with them. Initially, we were thinking maybe it was just the mothers that had three or four kids with them. They were just trying to get their information or their medication and leave as quickly as possible. But that prediction was not supported. It was, the people who were accompanied engaged in more behaviors. And in wait time, there was really no difference. You can see that, busy was slightly higher, but again, that wasn't significant. Here's a summary of our regression analysis. Those who were most likely to look outside the bag were the Asians, the older customers, and those who were accompanied. Those who were most likely to look inside the bag were the accompanied customers. And then finally, those who looked at the medication level were the older and accompanied. So as you can see, the people who were accompanied were most likely to engage in all three of the behaviors, probably because they were, and we should have identified, maybe the age group of who was accompanying the customer, but those who probably had caregivers with them were more conscientious about the medication, making sure that it was correct. And then finally, the least likely to engage in all three behaviors for outside the bag, white, younger, alone, and then for least likely to look inside the bag, the alone status, and then for least likely to look at the medication level, again, the younger and alone. Perhaps they're more independent. Perhaps they're naive to the threats of medication errors. Again, we had no idea of determining their reasoning or the rationale. And here's a regression table if you want to see the significance values and the odds ratios. But this is the same information I just presented. Okay, so we know this study is rare. We can't say with certainty that it's one of a kind. We just didn't come across any similar studies in our investigation of previous studies. We did accomplish our three specific aims. We were able to determine that over 70% of our sample didn't engage in any protective behaviors, the three behaviors that we identified. Now, we can't we can't say this could be representative of the general population, but you know, this is just based on our study. We were able to determine that race, age, and accompanied status were significant predictors of consumer protective behavior. Gender was not. And then finally, we were able to determine that consumer wait time, whether they waited in line or didn't, it didn't influence consumer protective behavior. The limitations, well, this was an observational study, and as I mentioned, we were forced to pose as customers, so while we were observing, we would act like we were looking at products or reading labels or, you know, pretending we were reading so many Hallmark cards or whatever. So sometimes we weren't able to, you know, we weren't accurately observing the behavior, and we might have missed something while we had our head down, or maybe our line of vision in the store was obstructed, or maybe the customer, we only focused at the walk-up counter, so maybe the customer walked away and went to another part of the store and then checked the bag and you know, made sure everything was correct. So we weren't able to identify that with certainty either. Also, accompanied status. We didn't know. Maybe somebody was accompanied with them, but they just weren't there at the walk-up counter with them. So, again, we were just focused on the walk-up counter. We didn't follow the customers, and that would be kind of creepy, just following the customers all around the store. But no, we just focused on the walk-up counter. Conclusion, we do feel that, you know, although this is just a study, a local study at a small college town in Texas, we do feel that there's still a need to increase consumer awareness of the dangers of medication errors, and that they, you know, though pharmacies, I'm sure, strive hard not to commit any medication errors, but we feel that the population still needs to know that the possibilities are still present. Let's see. Oh, another thing about the future studies, we weren't able to monitor communication between the consumer or the customer and the physician. I mean, the pharmacist or the pharmacy personnel. Simply because this is an observational study, so maybe looking more at communication between the pharmacist and the customer would strengthen, you know, future studies. But like I said, this is just a class project, and we applied to try to get some kind of presentation at the APHA, and we got an oral presentation. So I'm just happy to have the opportunity to speak in front of a national represented audience. Any questions? Yes, ma'am.
I actually came in here specifically to your presentation because I just moved to a team of work called, I work with the Food and Drug Administration, and I am the Center for Drugs on a team of a new program that was developed about 2 years ago called the Patients Initiative, which is completely focused on reducing medication-related injury. So I was very interested in your presentation, and I was wondering whether you and your colleagues or your professor have thought about what the next step might be in your community, whether you've identified a problem and whether you want to look at ways to intervene with that, because you have, like I said, sort of a small-town community that you could really work with. Have you thought about doing that?
Well, this is a class project, so none of us were really, you know, this wasn't our research focus. I mean, like, you know, my bio sketch said that I was metabolic syndrome prevention, and that's my focus. But it was a good opportunity for us to engage in a research project and go and collect data and run the analysis. And our discussions are the final discussion of the semester. You know, we mentioned, you know, what could we do? What you know, and a lot of us were, you know, we're going to try to publish, you know, a paper, an article, so that, you know, maybe somebody might say, oh, well, that was a good study. Maybe I can repeat this at other locations around the country and maybe get different or similar results. And if that's the case, then obviously it would lead to some maybe interventions or some programs aimed at increasing awareness. I mean, according to our results, so almost over 70% of our sample just got the bag and just left. You know, they just put it in their shopping cart and took off. And I mean, if that's the case, then you know, I think it's important that everybody knows that, you know, the medication errors can occur, and they can be adverse. I mean, they can be drastic. They could be devastating. I mean, it can even lead to death. So I think that, you know, increasing the awareness of making sure that people understand that medication errors can occur and they can be detrimental. So at some point, that would have to be the progression. So. Oh, well, I mean, if you need some information, I should have put my contact. I don't know if I did, but if you need it, I have it. So if you need to get a hold of me, you know, whatever. I put it online. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Did I what?
An IRB approval.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Yes.
And
did you do the pharmacy? Is that the dietary one?
No.
So they felt that nobody would be harmed by this, and I am actually sure nobody was harmed by this. Nor was there any way for you to know anybody's identity. And I'm sure that was the case, too. Did the pharmacy know you were there?
No, the pharmacies had no idea. And, I mean, that was one of the things we talked about. Bryan College Station, although it's a small town, it's there's a lot of pharmacies. So we made sure that we went to different pharmacies every time we went. We didn't want to go to the same pharmacy every day at the same time, and they would just like, well, why is this guy still always here at the same time? So we never approached the pharmacies.
Okay.
And that's interesting to, you know, to think about. You know, I wonder what they would have thought about us going in and observing, but it wasn't really a study about them. It was a study about the consumers.
Yes.
So,
however, I believe that consumer behavior might be different in different types of pharmacies. I noticed you seem to list some of the major chains, but there are vast differences actually among those chains in how that whole pharmacy calendar is run. I think they're vast in the sense that one of my local ones just changed hands from one of those to the other of those.
Mm-hmm.
And they revamped the whole thing.
Right.
And given different opportunities to ask about things. Also, the first chain that owned it had a specific way for me to tell, it turned out, but it was not publicized, whether it was the right medication. They printed a description of the pill because of the issue of generics looking different on the paper. Now, most customers probably didn't know that.
Right. Well, we did think about that. We thought that might have been a possibility, but we also thought maybe, you know, if we had the same amount across the board, equal number of participants in each group, we might have a more accurate indication of whether race was actually a predictor or not.
Yeah, but I think you might have enough to regroup
anyway. Oh, to regroup the Hispanics and the blacks?
Well, either put them together or combine them with the Asians altogether.
So minority versus... Okay.
Okay, one more quick question.
I'm just trying to get a clarification. If I read it right, in the logistic model, the only significant factor was accompaniment. Is that correct?
I'm sorry? Let's see. Okay, what was your question again?
On the logistic model, the last only significant factor accompaniment. So when you control for other factors, race and age were not significant. Is that true? I'm sorry, I can't really tell from that.
Well, this is just, I don't know if I understand completely what you're asking, but this is just showing, of those who looked outside the bag, the whites were the least likely to look according to the race. Yeah, that's when I basically copied and pasted from SPSS.
But did you look at it with larger references that might have been more stable, like white references?
No, ma'am, this is as far as we go. We went.
So I just can't really, I'm sorry, I can't really read that. Is accompaniment is if you control for other factors, race and age were not significant in all of these models?
Yes, ma'am.
And then age is significant in two of them, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. And the older customers and the accompanied customers were more likely to engage in all three behaviors.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.